Shalom Aleichem, everyone. Welcome one, welcome all. Mazel tov, mazel tov. As tonight, that is Friday, those who have already learned Rambam, we are concluding Sefer Zmanim. We're concluding the third book of the Rambam, and we're moving into Seder Nashim. So mazel tov to all those who are completing the Siyum. And we hope that today's Siyum will give us more oomph, more zest, more chayas, more exuberance, and more understanding the importance of what we are doing daily, learning Rambam together. Here we go. We are joined together for today's Siyum, together with a very special guest who we were schmoozing a little earlier today, and there's so much, really, so much to be able to discuss and to know. It's really an area of life where, unless you're involved in it, it's sort of something we take for granted. And so we want to welcome Rabbi Lazar. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. So why don't we start at the beginning? I guess, who in the world needs an Esrog other than Orthodox Jews? Meaning, Rabbi Lazar, you are someone who's providing a Calabria Esrogim for the world. Who grows them? What is it? Where are they? Can you give us a little bit of just the background, the geography, and how even you got into this whole story? So it would be a great beginning.
Okay, good evening. So the Calabria Esrogim, the Esrog is a fruit that is not just used by the Jews. It's used for different purposes. Actually, its scientific name is Citrus Medica, means the citrus of medicine. It has some healing powers to it. And besides that, it's also used for perfumes and other, sometimes they use it a little bit also in the food, or they do certain things where they do like jam or liqueurs. It's obviously not used as much as other citrus like the lemon or the lime. Also probably because the production is very limited. It's a very hard tree to grow. So this is in general what it's used. And it also grows in specific areas like Calabria in Israel. So it's not a fruit that, you know, a lot of people have access to.
And how did you get connected to Calabria and Esrogim? What is the connection between Rabbi Lazar and Calabria?
Hey, actually, I'm the last piece, this whole, the whole story starts much, much before me. So actually there was Rabbi Jacobson. He was a mashpia in Russia. And Rabbi Israel Jacobson, yeah. Already when he was there, he was bringing Calabria Esrogim to Russia for the Lubavitch community, for the Rebbeim. And then once he moved to the USA, he started bringing Calabria Esrogim. Probably he was the first one who brought Calabria Esrogim to the USA. For sure, he was the one that was providing this Esrogim for the
1940s?
He came around then. I think a little bit before that he came. So Rabbi Jacobson was basically ordering this Esrogim. There was a Jew who lived in the city of Genova. It's a port city, and he used to order this Esrogim from Calabria, and he used to get them and then, you know, distribute them. Whoever ordered this Esrogim, he used to send it to them. And this is how it went on for many years.
And that's where the name Yanover comes from Genova.
Correct. From the city Genova, which the Esrogim used to come out from. So, you know, people just called it Yanover because it came from there. Really, it came from Calabria, but the name just, you know, it caught it. Anyway, so at a certain point in the middle of the 1950s, there was a Jew from Lugano. Lugano is a city in Switzerland, but it's on the border with Italy. And this person went to Calabria just for vacation in the summer. And when he went there, he noticed that some Esrogim trees were grafted. We'll explain what that means. But he right away told Rabbi Perlov. Rabbi Perlov was sent by, I imagine, by the Rebbe right after the war in the 50s, maybe even by Friedrich Rebbe, I'm not sure, to Milan before Rabbi Gorelick. And he was, he did a lot of things before he moved to Australia. And Rabbi Gansberg, was friendly with this person from Lugano, Rabbi Zigobal, Mr. Zigobal, and he told him about this thing, and Rabbi Perlov wrote to the Rebbe. When Rabbi Perlov wrote to the Rebbe said that it would be a good thing that someone would go there and see what's happening. So I think Rabbi Perlov maybe went there, or maybe it was Rabbi Jacobson directly. The next summer he went there and he understood that, you know, you can't just order this regim without being there. And the Rebbe said there should be two witnesses, two edim, to see that the esrig is really not grafted. So since then, that's how, you know, people started coming to Calabria. Before that, no Jew even went to Calabria. There was no reason. The esrigim were sold as, you know, per kilo, whatever it was. The guy didn't know. They weren't taking care of the esrigim. They weren't doing anything. They were just cutting the esrigim off the tree. There were probably a very high rate of esrigim which weren't kosher. And from the esrigim, whatever they were able to get, they, you know, and Rabbi Jacobson himself said that the esrigim are really in a bad shape. They weren't taking care of them. They didn't know what to do. They were just selling esrigim like a fruit.
What does that have to do with you?
So Rabbi Jacobson came for a few years, and he needed someone to be with him. So when my father in the 1960s came to Milan, so Rabbi Jacobson asked him if he could join him, because Rabbi Jacobson used to fly to Milan, I guess. And from there, I guess there was no other flight. I think he used to fly to Milan for some reason. Maybe there was a Jewish community in Milan, so he used to come to Milan. It was a Lubavitch community.
This is where your family got connected. Okay. Yeah. So let's step back for a second. Just maybe it's the obvious, but why are we going to Calabria for esrigim? What is the give us in 30 seconds why Calabria is the place?
So Calabria is the place that the Lubavitch Hasidim always took esrigim from. The Rebbe Rashab mentioned that there's a midrash that Moshe Rabbeinu sent the shluchim to Italy, to Calabria, on clouds to bring esrigim when the Jews were in the desert. So we have this very strong connection with Calabria for the esrigim. It's, you know, you ask any Lubavitcher, the best thing that he, the best esrig that he would want is esrig that grows in Calabria. These days already...
Esrig grow in Calabria, and I live in the Bay Area where the weather can also grow esrigim. It's so I have a Calabria esrig that grow in California. Why wouldn't I do that? Why would I, meaning it's the same esrig.
So you're not the first one to have this great idea. People before you already thought about it. And what they did was that they asked the Rebbe, and the Rebbe gave them their esrig, as far as I understand. And they planted from the seeds of that esrig, if I'm not mistaken, they planted.
But you're not do anymore, right?
Again,
you're out of business then?
No, we're not, Baruch Hashem. It's not. The esrigim, they planted the Calabria esrigim in Israel. So you could buy in Israel esrigim that originate from Calabria.
Why would someone buy them from you?
First of all, it's not for me. There's Baruch Hashem today, probably.
Calabria. No, I understand. You're not a businessman. I understand. No, I'm saying, so what's the advantage of buying it from Calabria if I already have the esrig in Israel or in California, wherever, from Calabria?
It's a very good question, but I think it's the fact the land has something to it. I mean, there's no question that, you know, something is connected to the land. The land, it says the land was blessed. Yaakov gave the Mishmani Arsi Moshevecha, that it's, Rashi says, it's Italia Shel Yavam, which is... The southern part of Italy. So there's no question that there's for sure something connected to the actual place. Obviously you could take and, you know, it's like, that's the original esrig. You could always take it and copy it and paste it in different countries. And I know there's people that also grow esrigim in California, in Arizona, and in different places, but the original esrig, what we believe is what, you know, our mineg is to take it from Calabria. But obviously today there's thousands of chassidim also buy esrigim in Israel, and there's no problem with it. But it's something, okay, that, you know, the original one.
Got it. So let's move on to you use the word merkav, use the word grafting. So let's just go for the basic. First of all, for those of us who are not botanists, what is grafting? And second of all, we're making the claim that this is an unbroken chain from Calabria for 2,000 years. Well, how do we have any idea that they are not all been grafted? We weren't there for 2,000 years, and they never wanted there to be witnesses. Well, until there were witnesses, how do we know that anything we're getting is kosher? And what does it mean to graft? So, if you can give us a little bit of a botanical lesson, that would be great. Botanical lesson.
Okay, so actually, you're correct, 100%. There's no way to know that for 2,000 years, this is a son of a son of a son of the original Esrig. But this question came up already in the beginning. My father told me the first years already, he asked Rabbi Jacobson. And although there are opinions that say that if something was grafted at a certain point, then, you know, it's already contaminated and can't be, you know, it's already not the original one. Rabbi Jacobson told him that there's no issue whatsoever. And I imagine, when I'm speaking to my father, I imagine that this was something that he probably discussed also with the Rebbe. And the fact is that, so let's see what it means grafting. Why do you need to graft? You know, you have a tree. The tree was made by God, and it's supposed to grow without any issues. And this is why the Torah is against grafting. So that means that the tree, in theory, should be able to grow. So what happens is that the esrog is a very delicate plant. The roots of the esrog, instead of growing deep in the ground, they grow horizontally. They grow on the ground, basically. The whole time you have to cover them in order that they shouldn't get ruined by the rain or by the heat or by the cold, whichever element that could damage the tree, the roots. So someone had a great idea. He said, instead of having to worry so much about the roots, let's take a lime tree, a lemon tree, which some other citrus tree. And once the tree is growing, you cut it off and you put in a branch of esrog. And that's it. You have a tree, which on the bottom is a lemon, which is strong and is going to resist to the cold, to the heat and all the elements. And on the top, you're getting an esrog. So you have both worlds. So obviously we, according to halacha, Jewish law says that the esrog needs to be perfect, needs to be coming from a tree, which is 100% the esrog tree. So for us, this is a problem. So at this point.
So that's what I mean. Branch of esrog, putting it on a lemon tree, and then I have, that's a grafted. And now what grows from that, you're saying, is not kosher.
Correct. But okay. Now there's a whole discussion, because I think the Chassam Sefer, if I'm not mistaken, brings some simanim, some ways how you could check if an esrog was grafted or not. And basically, it's basically describing, when he says what is not an esrog, he's describing a lemon. Okay, it says that the peel is very thin, and the seeds are in a certain direction, etc. So, you know, you would say it's very easy. You want to know if esrog was grafted or not, just cut it in half and you'll know. But it's not so simple, because you could see, and I tried it many times, and there's no way of seeing the esrog that comes out of a grafted tree and the esrog that comes out of a non-grafted tree is the same exact fruit. There's no difference. So you would ask me, so what, you know, the chachamim, they spoke about, the achrenim spoke about the difference that there is between grafted and non-grafted. So what are they talking about? So actually my brother-in-law, Rabbi Oberlander, he's a shliach in Budapest, Hungary. He did a whole research on this. And basically he figured out that there's two ways of grafting. One way is how they would do it in Calabria, which they need the roots of the lemon. So they use the lemon as a root, and on top they put the esrog. So whatever is coming out is always going to be an esrog, because it's coming out from the branch of esrog. In other places in the north of Italy, they do the exact opposite. They want the roots of the esrog tree, and on top of it, they put a lemon or a lime. So that's what, when they were talking about grafted, they were talking about the other, the inverse way of grafting, and that really comes out of a lemon. But when you're grafting it the way that they grafted in Calabria, you're always going to get an esrog. So that's why Rabbi Jacobson said, doesn't make a difference if you're, even if the you're taking a son that is maybe comes from a grafted, a branch from a grafted esrog tree, and you're planting it, that branch is still esrog. It didn't change. It just was getting its source of food, of water, whatever it is. I don't hear.
So then a grafted esrog tree is fine.
No, it's not fine because the esrog got, didn't get his the vitality and the water directly through a whole esrog tree. It was getting it through something else. But the branch itself is still esrog. It's still esrog. So once you detach it from the tree, it goes back to be an esrog. So there's no issue whatsoever. And this is what Rabbi Jacobson explained to my father. And that's why we don't, and there's no way to actually check, you know, what happened in 2000 years. We have no idea to check.
Do we know the location? I mean, Calabria, is has it been an ancient city for, I mean, I don't know Italian geography. Is this the same city that's been during the Roman Empire was Calabria, during the Greek Empire was there Calabria, or is this sort of, we're guessing, just the general south of Italy?
No, it's actually, Calabria is a region. And in that region, actually, when my father started going down to Calabria in the 1960s, there was a strip that was maybe 100 kilometers long. Now we're talking about maybe 20, 30 kilometers. There was the esrog was growing in. Sorry, I don't hear you.
Were esrog trees than there used to be?
They're much more concentrated. They were not being taken care of as well. And I remember personally when we used to go, when I was much younger, we used to go some days and we used to find maybe, you know, some days we came back with 10, 20 esrogim, 30, 50, you know, a good day was maybe 80, 90, 100 was like, you know, an amazing day. These days, the farmers know how to take care of the trees and you could go in one day and get even 1,000. So everything really changed. And I don't hear you.
I said the price hasn't come down though.
No, the price went up because they didn't work on the trees. Today they're investing a lot of energy and money for all type of pesticides and they have a lot of workers to make sure they have to cut all the, you know, all the leaves around the esrog and all the thorns and they tie them. So, you know, the more they work, the more kosher esrogim are able to come out.
Uh-huh. Okay, before we let you go, before we do the actual siyum, today I haven't finished Rambam for Friday or whatever, but we are sort of in Chanukah and in Purim. And I couldn't help but notice when I contacted you beforehand that your WhatsApp photo is you lighting a menorah there in historic locations. Could you perhaps give us a little bit, just as we conclude, because we're about to end with Chanukah and Purim. Can you please
Let's start with Purim. So Purim is very interesting because the Rambam says that any city that had a wall from the times of Yeshua ben Nun should celebrate Shushan Purim. But in theory, in Rome, there's some people that say that maybe we should be celebrating Purim like in Yerushalayim. In the meantime, no one yet was able to, you know, make actual decision. So we're still celebrating Purim but someone was in touch with me. He's putting out a book, so we'll see.
Good. People like making chumras. It's very good. Okay.
And Chanukah, Baruch Hashem, Chanukah in Rome is, I mean, for the past 30 years, Rabbi Chazan lights a public menorah in Piazza Barberini in the center of town. When we came, we started lighting also in our area, in Jewish area. And a few years ago, Baruch Hashem, we started lighting also the menorah at the Colosseum. And it was well received. And we hope to make it bigger and bigger. And the actual Colosseum Park we met with them and they're very excited of the idea. So after 2 years that we lit, they want to also be part of it. And it's a shame. We hope that's going to have a lot of it's going to make a lot of publicity for the mitzvah. Okay, should we?
Wow, with tremendous hatzlacha. If we can please ask you to please actually be mesayim sefer zmanim for us all. Thank you very much for this. And here we go. Rabbi Chazan is now going to conclude sefer zmanim.
Okay, so actually, the last three halachas are very interesting. So it says mitzvah ner Chanukah, mitzvah chabiba ad me'ayit. The mitzvah ner Chanukah is a very treasured mitzvah. V'tzarich adam lizarba, the person has to be very careful with it. Kidei lo'idia hanes, to, let's say, publicize the miracle, or lo'hesiv b'shvach hakel v'hidaya lo'i, and to thank God, al anisim she'asa, for the miracles that he did to us. Afilu ein lo'i ma'yechal, elo min atzdaka, shayel. Even if someone doesn't have money to eat, he should still go and collect money, so he should be able to light the Hanukkah candles. Or he should sell his clothing. So basically, the Rambam is saying it's such an important mitzvah. You have to do whatever it takes to light. You have to sell whatever you have in order to do it. Now, here it becomes even more interesting. Let's say he has just one coin and he could just buy either the fun of Kiddush Hayom Hadlakas Ner Chanukah. He could either buy money for wine to do Kiddush Shabbos day or to light candles for Chanukah. So it says Magdim Shemen Lehadlik Ner Chanukah. He should buy the oil in order to light the Ner Chanukah. Before then, the wine, alayayin v'kiddush alayayin, hoylu shnei midivri seferim, even though they're both from the Chachamim, mutav lahagdi ner Chanukah, shirbo zikar in anes, ner Chanukah is more important because it has, we're remembering the miracle. So here, the Rambam is saying, it's more important than kiddush because we're remembering the miracle. But then, now he says, hoylu fanam ner beisiv in ner Chanukah, but if you have enough oil just to light either the candles of Shabbos or the candle for Hanukkah. So the Rambam says here, no, the most important is to light the candles of Shabbos. Mishum shleim beisei, because the candles of Shabbos bring peace in the house. Shere Hashem nimchak, we know that God's name is erased in order to lase shalom b'nish l'ishtei, to make peace between a man and his wife. God shalom shalom ba'elam, and it's the peace is something very important because the Torah was given to make peace in the world. The ways of the Torah are ways of peace, and so we see how important it is that even though this mitzvah of Chanukah is so important, but the mitzvah of having peace in the house is even more important, and that the Torah brings peace in the whole world. So let's hope that by learning, actually, I don't know if you followed, but tonight in Israel, there was an amazing Kiddush Hashem. There was an enormous Siyum HaRambam that was actually not done by Chabad. It was done by the Rebbe Vizhnitz, the Rosh Hashiva of Kaltera, and other big rabbis in Israel. And we see how actually the learning of the Rambam is really reaching a lot of different, not just in Chabad, and everybody's accepting the fact that to learn Rambam. So let's finish. Rachmana tisyata nigmar sefer shlishi v'ezos shaday minayin minyan prakim shal sefer deshim v'tisha ilche shabes shleshim prakim ilche zirubim shmene prakim ilche shvitas asa shlesha prakim ilche shvitas yeim tev shmene prakim ilche zchomis amatsa ושמנה פרקים יחד שפר וסוכו ולולב, שמנה פרקים יחד שקלים, ארבע פרקים יחד קידוש החדש, תשע עשר פרקים יחד עניס, חמיש פרקים יחד מגילה וחנוכה, ארבע פרקים.
יישר כוח. Thank you very, very, very much. אסקיף הנסחל ולשלמה will immediately start Sefer Nashim, will start Sefer Nashim, but the Rambam says, Teiras Chachma, Makar Chaim, Lasser, Mek Shem Avis, that the Torah is an instruction guide. It's a spring of life, and it gets us away and keeps us away from the thing that's the opposite of death. that and the anything to do with that. And the Rambam opens and begins. Before the Torah was given, a man met a woman. If they mutually had an agreement, they can live together as husband and wife, and that would be it. But once the Torah is given, and it's Davi Yisrael, and the Jewish people are commanded, that if a man and woman want to get married, he has to actually acquire her in the presence of witnesses, and then and only then can they be married. Only once a man takes a woman, uniquely designates him, only then can they live together as husband and wife. Yeshakayach, thank you very, very much. You should merit to continue your holy work, both in the shluchas and in helping us all be makayim the mitzvah of arba minim in the greatest way possible. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us, and all those who are behind the scenes and making this happen. And we look forward to seeing everybody for the siyum of Seder Nashim. Thank you, of Sefer Nashim. Thank you very much, and hatzlacha rabba.